Nilamadavadan is growing beyond belief.
Really?
They bought up two more cul-de-sacs.
Wow.
Each of those will be divided into 6 two-story houses. One of them is already finished, which is a sannyasi palace. I'm here with Vatsals downstairs, with Mother Sashikali, like the caretakers. Upstairs there's four sannyasi rooms with private baths, dining area, library. Keshva Bharti is my neighbor now. You have to go through the front door, the upstairs door, the individual door, the bedroom door, and the bathroom door. All together, when it's finished, there'll be 38 houses within one block of the temple.
Wow, amazing.
Six will be owned by the temple, and all the rest are individually owned by devotees, like that. Just what Prabhupada said. And then across the street, which is a divided street, by Krishna's fate, they ended up with this big plot, and they're going to build a full apartment complex there, Govinda Gardens, which will have 38 units, one, two, and three bedroom units like that. And the temple construction, the temple is big enough for any ISKCON temple to fit inside the temple room. The altar altar weighs 14 tons from South India, carved, Texas. Yeah. And they're looking down the road to having a charter school here, a whole Hare Krishna school. So we're doing a whole Nectar of Devotion seminar, a Radha-desh seminar. It's the first time we've ever done it here, and there's really a lot of experiences, like what works and what doesn't work, in terms of organizing professional educational stuff. And again here, it says, Iti uktva roshatam raksho, Vayasyan Rishi Balakaha Koshiki Appa Upashvita Bhagvarajam Visharjaha. The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Koshika while speaking to his playmates, and discharged the following thunderbolt words.
Maharaj. Let me give me a second here to mute everybody,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Okay.
One moment. Okay, I left you unmuted. So I'm gonna mute myself, and then if all of those on Skype, please try and stay quiet, but you won't be able to hear anybody. We've got full control
okay.
here. All right, thank you, Maharaj.
Purport. The circumstances under which Maharaj Parikshit was cursed, were simply childish, as it appears from this verse. Kringi was showing his impudency amongst his playmates, who were innocent. Any sane man would have prevented him from doing so much great harm to all human society. So I guess the point here is that his playmates, they were just ordinary people. They didn't know what was going on, like this and that. You know? So they're not really to blame or anything, just kind of simple little boys. You know? By killing a king, like Maharaj Parikshit, just to make a show of acquired brahminical power, the inexperienced son of a Brahmin committed a great mistake. Iti langita maryadam takshakaha saptame hani dakshati sma kulangaram chodito me tatadruham. So maryada means that etiquette. When Vidura asks Uddhava to be his guru, please accept me as your disciple. And then Uddhava says, well, I can't do that, you know, because it would be guru maryada vyatikrama. That would be the offense, breaking the etiquette of surpassing a superior authority. You know? So etiquette is a very serious thing, you know. It's just like the law of gravity. Serious business. Yeah. People, if you try and break the law of gravity, you have a lot of problems. Yeah. Then Newton, also, people didn't know what is reality, you know, kind of. So Newton then, with his laws of mechanics, he also added the law of inertia. And he then calculated the force is equal to the mass times the acceleration, you know. So, or the deceleration. So then by all these things we can understand, like, you know, these laws of smashing into each other with automobiles and so many physical laws. But the laws of etiquette are just as strong, you know, just as powerful. And they have a reaction in terms of different ways like that. So, you know, the little boy was, you know, thinking in terms of these things. And of course it's very reminiscent of Arjuna, because Arjuna also doesn't want to fight on the basis of his immature understanding of the rules of karma and everything else like that. You know? The scene to me, that the boy, what's his name, son of Samit? No, what's his name? Anyway, the boy is, you know, this basically just showing off of his friends. He has almost no intelligence. You know? About what's happening. It's just some kind of thing to show off in front of your friends like that. And almost no intelligence whatsoever what's happening like that. Jungi. The Brahmana's son cursed the king thus, on the seventh a day from the day, a snake bird the most will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. Report. Thus the beginning of the misuse of brahminical power began, and gradually the brahmanas in the age of Kali became devoid of brahminical powers and culture. So one kind of thought is to go ahead and apply this in terms of ISKCON. Yeah? And we can think about brahminical power and the brahmanas being our culture of brahminical authority, or in our culture of sannyas life in ISKCON, because, you know, the sannyasi is nothing but, you know, a highly purified brahmana. Yeah. Yeah. And is this something that happened, that we have more potency for the sannyas ashram in the structure of ISKCON before? Was it abused? Yeah, so we can kind of meditate on this when we're hearing these verses, to try and maybe practically apply these things in terms of our situation. Thus the beginning of the misuse of brahminical power began, and gradually the brahmanas in this age of Kali became devoid of both brahminical powers and culture. The brahmana boy considered Maharaj Parikshit to be Kulangara, or the wretched of the dynasty. But factually the brahmana boy himself was so, because only from him did the brahmana caste become powerless. Like the snake whose poisoned teeth are broken. Snake is fearful as long as his poisoned teeth are there. Otherwise, he is fearful only to children. The personality of Kali conquered the Brahmin boy first, and gradually conquered the other castes. That's the whole scientific system of the orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. One should seek the root cause of vitiation and not try to condemn the system as it is without knowledge of its scientific value. And I was just trying to bring this home in terms of contemplating this in terms of our situation in ISKCON. And so let me present some ideas here, which I may or may not believe in, like that. But as a perspective, you know, and then the other people can present their ideas. Because that's the actual value of these things, is we actually learn to take the stories to heart and see different problems we have in our own lives. Maybe we're not, you know, really gross in our activities. We're I own one devotee, a nice devotee, Vaishya Tennessee, my godbrother. And he left, he was a brahmachari for 5 years. Then he left, and eventually he got into some business activities. He was a little Vaishya by nature, got married. And now he smokes maybe one pack a week and chants rounds every day as many as he feels like. You know, rests in the morning across the street in the next to the creek next to his house. He's made his $1 million, you know, he has a wife, not initiated, you know. And so, you know, that's not, he's not perfectly situated, but he's not totally imperfectly situated too. He's chants Hare Krishna beads, he's, you know, he and his wife are vegetarian, they make some donations to the temple, okay. And somebody else said he's following all the principles, you know. But he's just not making an advancement. He's always hanging out on kind of the level of like, good person and probably going to go to Indraloka or something. You know, when he leaves his body and be a devotee in Indraloka or something. So, by reading the Bhagavatam, we should be able to see how these stories apply to us, that's my point, and how they actually can help us to remove these impediments, which may take us from being a 60% pure devotee to a 65% pure devotee by the end of the class. Actually, if you make 1% progress with each class, boy, we're going to be doing a lot of progress. Yeah. So it's interesting that in the beginning, when Prabhupada wrote the letter on management, he established the GBC body, and of course in his will, when he left his body, he said, the governing body commission shall be the ultimate managing authority for the entire International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So one thesis would be that, yes, the governing body commission is a management, that the ultimate management authority is ultimately a managing authority. And so when Prabhupada established the letter on management, he was describing the GBC positions. And of course it's very interesting that all the members of the GBC body, originally as a member, were grihasthas. You know? So again, Prabhupada was hoping that management would be in the hands of grihasthas. When, what's his name, King Svayambhuvamanu, he wants Priyavrata, his son, to give up his austerities and his celibacy and everything and get married and take charge of the universe so he'll have a chance to do austerities. But Narada Muni says, no, just stay in the ashram, continue doing austerities and go back to Godhead. So then Priyavrata comes with Brahma and Narada Muni is outgunned. He says, okay, go ahead and do it. But the point is that you cannot be king unless you're married. You know, Ram can't do it, anybody else, because you won't have the feminine compassion in the administration then to be able to relate to society and develop a wholesome, expanded society like that. So, what's some more here? Oh, yeah. In the letter on management, then Prabhupada also in the second half, he said, we have also given the renounced order of life to some of our disciples. So clearly distinguishing, you know, the two ashrams like that. And he said, and they also have their duties. I think Prabhupada even says right there that they should travel to our different centers and enliven the devotees there by preaching, and they should discover options for opening new centers and make those reports to the GBC body. Okay. So, Brahminical culture in ISKCON. Originally, to every GBC meeting in Mayapur, there was a temple president's meeting and also a sannyas meeting. And as far as I know, both of those have been eliminated completely. And there was some effort to revive the temple president's meeting in North America and shift the power like that. But the sannyas meetings, there's been no arrangement like that. Yeah. And so then the question arises, you know, was there abuse of the Brahminical culture, you know, which led to its like impotence, you know, and because of that, then the political culture became so strong that the most, if you want to, as you're advancing, the first thing you do is you take sannyas. And if you're more advanced, you become a GBC secretary. And I guess if you're even more advanced, then you get your PhD, like that. So you become PhD, GBC secretary, sannyasi. But that's it. We've heard that many times, that actually, and even at the original Vyasa Puja, Vyasa Puja's in Vrindavan, and as I read the accounts and heard them, Prabhupada had the sannyasis make their offerings first, then the GBC members. Yeah. Of course, that time they may have been more grihasthas, like that. Yeah. So, and it says, and then the, okay, so then the idea is, because our sannyasis are all falling down, our gurus, who are supposed to be purified brahmanas, therefore we should just eliminate this. We shouldn't have any more gurus in ISKCON. Prabhupada's the only guru for the next 14,000 years, or 10,000. Yeah. So I had to give a lecture. I came back from South America, and it was right after Harikesh Prabhu had his fall down. And it was some controversy in South America. Where I was, he wasn't like the guru in Argentina. It was much more profound interaction. Then, when I flew overnight, landed in Miami, the devotee that picked me up was very disturbed by all this because, you know, maybe my guru will fall down too. He's a big gun. So what, you know, but all these big guns are falling down. Okay, we talked a little bit. When I got to the temple, it was just in time for Sringarati. Then afterwards, the temple president says, you've got to give a class. Why would I go take a bath and rest? No, give a class. Okay, so. So I opened the thing up, and it was just about Indra becoming a bogus sannyasi and stealing the horse, you know, of Maharaj Prithu, like that. So there's a whole, all these purports about false cheating sannyasis. And right in the next verse is the word Ritvik, like that. So it seemed like, you know, Prabhupada is not dead. You know, he's lived forever in his books, and the super soul arranges, if we're so stupid, that we get exactly the words of Prabhupada we need when we need them. It seemed like that so much. And so the idea was that, okay, yeah, it's a fact that because people will abuse Brahminical culture in the Kali Yuga, because people will abuse, you know, the sannyas culture, because they'll abuse the guru culture, the acharya culture. Therefore, the tendency of the administrators, second-class people, is to eliminate them all. Okay, we're not going to have any sannyasis. Well, next comes the brahmanas. Okay, okay. And then we solve the problem. If there's no sannyasis and no gurus, then they can't fall down like that, right? Embarrasses. But then from the purports, then the problem, Prabhupada says, is that this will simply make a more difficult situation, because without like a stereotyped example, you know, for common people to follow, then they'll become unmanageable. So it's a headache for the administration to deal with like fallen sannyasis, you know, fallen Brahmins. But if they eliminate them altogether, then there's no ideal ashram, you know, avoiding feminine association with the opposite sex, you know, strictly engaging full time in hearing and chanting, you know, not having possessions like that, you know, giving up a vow of social intercourse, favoring this group or that group, you know. You know, for example, in one temple there was a controversy and the administration was engaged in a dispute with one resident sannyasi over whose authority was whose. So one of my disciples was supposed to be the temple commander, and he was favoring the resident sannyasis. So the temple president and some more people came to me and said, Maharaj, you've got to preach to your disciple to be a little bit less detached, more detached from Maharaj so-and-so's instructions and listen to us. So I was saying, that's what I avoid, you know, is being a guru. Other people do it, you know, but my thing is that, no, this is not really Brahminical culture, is it? You give people general principles. On politics, you talk about everything publicly. So everybody knows what you're telling everybody else. And that way you stay detached from the politics, from the administration, and then you're not favoring anybody. You know. But of course, that then makes some people angry, and they want to take action against you. Okay, That's what Jesus Christ did, and he got nailed to the cross. So if you want to become a sannyasi, that's what you can do. You know, speak boldly about what you think in ISKCON, and then accept the political reprisals like that. So once the sannyasi and Brahmin order is removed, then what it's saying here is that next, then the administration is going to fall apart, you know, because of Kali. And nobody will be able to handle governing people properly, arranging for people's security, the common people, their occupation, their residence, like that. The security of their marriage relationships. All these things will be destroyed. And then Prabhupada says, another class, the personality of conquered the Brahmin boy and gradually other classes, thus the whole scientific system of the order of society in this age assumed the form of a vidyatic caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men, similarly influenced by the age of Kali. And of course, this would obviously seem to be obviously be a democracy, you know, which is where actually Prabhupada says that a gang of laboring and mercantile men get control of society. We just read this in chapter 17. You know, influenced by a gang of laboring and mercantile men. And that's basically what seems to happen in many places. The big multinationals have bought out the different senators in Peru and places like that and influenced them and are affecting controlling the elections. And then they're fighting with the Shudras, and there's no real, you know, brave Kshatriyas or wise Brahmanas left. Of course, our program is to make them. You know, first we have to make the Brahmins, Prabhupada said, and their qualities. Then they can give protection to the Kshatriyas. Protection from what? Protection from their own tendency towards sense gratification. When that's a fact. For example, when I go to a temple, I always go to Mangalarti, and people comment that, oh, the, you know, our temple president very seldom comes to Mangalarti, but when you're here, he always comes. Okay. So, yeah, but that's a tendency. You got the power and the influence, and who won't be seduced by it? It seems like, you know, many of us, you know, must be succumbed to the same thing of flattery from ladies, you know, adjusting your budget to have your own nice car, you know, paying your phone bills. You know, there's a real tendency to there. But Brahmins, they then are pure, they keep the Kshatriyas protected from passion by their association. Yeah. Prabhupada recommends Parasara's Dharma Shastra. In the instructions of Bhishma Dev, chapter 9. And looking it up, in the begin, it says that this is written for Kali Yuga, and Manu Samhita is for more like, you know, maybe like Treta Yuga or yeah, like that. So there it says, in the age of Kali, kings are being conquered by rogues, maidens are becoming mothers, and women are conquering men. This is invariably what happens in the fourth age, the Kali era. So we see these things coming. In ISKCON, Prabhupada gives us descriptions, and then he gives us remedial measures, you know, for cultivating Brahminical culture, like that. So my perspective would be that, yeah, we've lost, our perspective in ISKCON has shifted over to too much passionate. Actually, I'm going to take be bold enough to make it. I think it's that way. But I also think that my ideas are not always that great, and I also think that my ideas sometimes are correct, but they're premature. And so, you know, I'm not like, you know, I'm open to like certainly a lot of education about what's going on. But not just me, other people too think that, you know, we should really strengthen our sannyas culture, that grihastha should take the responsibility of getting on the GBC body, that GBC body should retire at 50 or at least 55 years old, and they should take up vanaprasth life and then take up sannyas life. I've counseled people who've retired from Temple president, retired from his work, and we spent 45 minutes on the phone talking about what am I going to do now, you know, and what does vanaprasth mean. So then I invited him to come traveling with me to South America, and eventually the whole family came. Husband, wife, one son. And they just unbelievable. They just, you know, we made proper arrangements. We suggested preaching programs, and it became so incredible. They were just overwhelmed with like people just dying to hear what they had to say. Then they went on independently with the same programs developing, and they ended up in the Times of India, you know, like that. You know, so they began to realize, wow, there's more to do, and I see how to do it now, like that. So that's what lacking is, just this culture. And so people get afraid and they want to stick to their post and not give it up, and realizing that actually there's more important work to do in Vanaprastha ashram than there is in Grihastha ashram, with men, money, and ladies, trying to adjust those three things. You know, that's what Grihastha ashram means, politics means. But then in Vanaprastha you detach more from those things, but there's more work to do, more important work like that. Okay. That's my idea, my thesis, and we can take this from the Sringi here. So I will now ask for any questions, comments, complaints, whatever.
Well, I'll make a comment.
Okay, who is this?
Narhari.
Well, Hare Krishna, nice to hear from you.
Jai Swamiji, thank you so much for your association as always. Well, one thought would be, rather than so much focus on the various ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and really what the purpose and the duties of those ashrams are, I think perhaps a higher principle to focus upon is that regardless of ashram, that we should endeavor to become a pure devotee by following very strictly everything Prabhupada's taught us and really absorbing ourselves in this process and becoming pure. Mahaprabhu said, Naham Vipro Nichanapati Napi Vaishrana Shudra Gopi Bhartabla Kamaniya Dasa Dasa Anudas. So perhaps individually, less focused on whether we're a householder or whether you're a sannyasi or a brahmachari, there's really no impediment in any ashram, in any varna, particularly in this age of Kali, with the blessing of Buddha, to become completely pure and preach very powerfully and become a part of this mission in regardless whatever our ashram may be. And I think that's just one thought that immediately comes to mind. Just more focus on becoming pure where we are, rather than thinking that I have to evolve through in sort of a progressive fashion through the ashrams, varnas, or what have you, in order to achieve the goal, in order to be a very potent and valuable part of Prabhupada's mission.
Thank you, sir. I guess I could respond to that first.
Yeah. Sure.
So, let's see. First place, on the morning walks, you know, the famous morning walks in Vrindavan, where Prabhupada was talking about establishing the Varnashram College, and a lot of questions. And he was describing the role of each culture, you know. And one thing he said, they said, well, this is necessary for pure devotees. And he said, well, if our men are all pure devotees, then why are they falling down? You know, so we need to establish this so people will have, you know, a proper situation so they can cultivate, you know, pure devotional service. And then they asked, well, how does one become a Brahmin? And Prabhupada said, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. You know, so that's the first point that I would think is that, yeah, is that the Varnashram system, like you're saying, I agree completely, that we have to start with the Vaishnava culture. We have to start, it's Kali Yuga. But the result of that is that people start to become, you know, pious, they can give up marijuana, they can actually start to maintain Grihastha Ashram. So Prabhupada in New York, he first started with kirtan, chanting, prasadam. But then the first thing he established was not initiations, right? First thing he established was Varnashram. that if you're going to be in our society, boys and girls cannot live together unless they're married. So after the kirtan and everything else was strong enough, I would say that then the first fruit, you know, of one of the fruits of good kirtan and everything else is that people start to be able to maintain the varnashram system, but not always daivi varnashram. And if we're paramahamsas, we don't have to do that. We can walk around like Sukadeva Goswami and see naked girls taking baths and, you know, not distinguish that they're naked girls. But for preaching, we have to make those distinctions. So it's really nice to be able to figure out what our situation is for the sankirtan. And then go through it progressively, because when you're older, okay, it's more natural to be a counselor than it is when you're a young man, when you can do lots of hard work and all day with meeting people and dealing with their problems. So varnashram, as daivi varnashram for the benefit of the sankirtan movement, daivi varnashram so we can become, have a good proper situation, you know, to advance. And the ashrams, I would say that way, are designed to help you like that. You know, so many, the Nectar Vita the Bhagavad talks about that, that the sannyasi is like the white cloud, the grihasta is like the gray cloud. He has to carry all his water. But when he comes to the sannyas position, then he has this facility to help him, you know, think about these things, focus on it, and purify himself. Okay. So for our benefit, for preaching, and because it's the best example for others, not just to organize the sankirtan party, but to actually just to show example, and people see, oh, okay, these people are living like this and that, and they can't take advantage of the Hari Kirtan so much, but they can take advantage of a nice, you know, social arrangement, and that will help them become purified, so they take good birth in the next lifetime, and they take birth in the family of Vaishnavas. So that's the only thing I would say is that, and also Lord Chaitanya himself, he took, you know, for sankirtan, he took sannyas. You know. And the purport, Prabhupada says that, you know, the five things are not prohibited, because Lord Chaitanya, Narada Muni is traveling all over the place. And probably saying in the purport, this is what sannyas means. You know, just depend upon the tree bark for clothes and eat food from the trees. But he says, not possible in Kali Yuga. But he says, yes, taking a vow of giving up social intercourse, you know, this is my party, this is my group, this is my, you know, my so-and-so. He said, that is desirable. That actually, in that sense is sannyas, of becoming a brahmana. You know. So I would agree. My things, by the way, what some of the things you're saying definitely, but and the emphasis. But other than that, I think I would add that as we do that, then we see this naturally. We just manifest the varnashram system and its proper organization and proper implementation. But if it's not on the basis or a fruit of the Shravanam Kirtanam culture, like you're saying, I agree, then that's a problem. So the answer, the solution is to increase, you know, hearing and chanting in every situation, and then automatically, well, maybe a little bit of effort, that's the whole thing, a little bit of like intelligent effort, you know, then we will see the system is manifest like that. Over.
I think there's been too much emphasis on our society. I think we're in agreement. Both of the things we're saying are not at all mutually exclusive, but rather mutually inclusive, that we definitely need to have the varnashram system in place. But it seems that one of the weaknesses of our society, especially in the past, was too much of judging a devotee by their social position, as if someone is a GBC, oh, he must be the most advanced, or someone is a sannyasi, oh, he must be the most advanced. But in reality, we don't seem to see that. I mean, to some degree, yes, but another degree, no. I mean, we see many people in a very, very simple, humble position. Jayananda, for example, who you know, Prabhupada has us observe his day of departure, And he was just, you know, he's a very simple devotee doing, you know, sutra type work, you know, the transcendental garbage man. You know, I think we have to really see there are some women in our society who are incredibly advanced, and some householders incredibly advanced. And Mahaprabhu chose to have his most intimate discussions with Ramananda Roy, for example, Sita Mahiti, sister. So anyway, that's just my point, is we really have to, as we become more mature, we really have to judge each devotee, not so much on their social position, but on how they're truly becoming attached to Krishna and attached to Prabhupada's mission.
So a question that comes up is interesting. Is it possible to institutionalize this?
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, but wait, you hear the train going by, I guess, now. Okay, it's right across the road, the Radharani Express. Because your suggestion, I agree, but is it possible to institutionalize this desire? Is it possible to create institutions which allow us, you know, to make your comment a fact?
Well, institutionalizing is one thing. Greater than institutionalizing is education. Institution is physical structure, but actual education, where devotees actually become educated and truly understand the principles rather than just institutionalizing them.
Okay. So how can we do the education then? How can we improve the educational aspect?
We're doing it right now. We're hearing that Prabhupada gave us that. There's the Bhagavatam. If we simply, everything's there we need in the Bhagavatam. So every morning if we hear Bhagavatam, really open ears and studying Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada told us he didn't write these books just for us to distribute, but Prabhupada reading his books, study his books and know his books, and associating with understanding our level of spiritual advancement, where we're really at, and try to associate with more advanced than us. And then the knowledge and the realization will come from within, because even reading Prabhupada's books, it's not a mechanical process like studying a college textbook. That knowledge, you know, comes from within. Krishna, Matakshmitir Gyanam Apolinam Cha, Krishna enlightens us and Guru from within the heart. So if we act in such a way by, again, very strictly following the principles and studying our philosophy with a really open heart, by chanting our rounds allows us to, our heart to open so we can hear the Bhagavatam. And then Krishna pleased allows us in Guru to realize the Bhagavatam.
So to me, I'm bringing this up because I face the same kind of thoughts and stuff. So to me, what it really comes down to, it seems, because that's my point, because it's kind of like you can't institutionalize what we're talking about, because as soon as you institutionalize it, it ceases to be personal.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the institution is necessary because so many people are on different levels, and that's what Prabhupada wanted, you know, because we can help people. For example, Prabhupada one time, he said, don't come to these classes, it's just a formality. And he's looking at the devotees and he said, all right, come as a formality. He said, but also try to learn something, you know. So the formalities of the institution, everything there. But my conclusion is, you know, is that what it really comes down to is Yare Deki Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Amar Agnai Guru Hoi Tari Desh. Is that it comes down in the end is that individuals make the decision in a personal relationship to Krishna to preach to whoever they meet with and to establish these kind of relationships. And then automatically a little bit of institution, like then Ramananda organizes these classes, advertises them. But really what it comes down to is the individual personal commitment that to become a guru on Lord Chaitanya's order and just to, like you're saying, increase the hearing and chanting. That's what kind of my conclusion about it.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive. I think they both have to be there. We need to know that Ramananda is going to start this class sharply at 6:30 Hawaii time, and he has it set up. Different speakers will speak at different times, and we know roughly what time it's going to end along with our day. And they both have to be there. The institutional aspect as well as the heart.
It's an example of the railroad track, no? Both are necessary, both tracks. But the Brahminical track of hearing and chanting and the Vaishnava culture, you know, is the one that has to lead. And like you're saying, when the other one gets in front of everything, and then actually in some ways it's kind of interesting because our own experience is like we were all kind of like Sringi, you know? You know, trying to show our, I'm a sannyasi now, you know, I'm the president. And so in the beginning, we're all trying to show off our, you know, our power and authority, just like we're little arrogant brats, you know, so on. Yeah. Anyway, I brought it up because it seemed to me like it's very nice, makes really, and to me, it's a fact, and I'm just, yeah, I'm telling people that I really think basically in terms of that, that I agree with you, the basis is it has to be upon this. Back it up even more. I think it depends upon me, wherever I go, whoever I meet, inspiring more hearing and chanting, talking about these things, following the regular principles of Vaidhi Bhakti. And as a result of that, then the healthy Daivi Varnasham will grow, and that will be good for the three reasons we mentioned. Particularly speaking, I would say, yeah, I think that in ISKCON, then we need a revival of a more shift away from, I mean, many discussions about this with people. We need to shift away from a little bit passionate direction we've ended up in, and a little bit more culture of a Brahminical aspect like that. Yeah, go on. Yeah, and it's difficult. Yeah, Anji, Balabhadra. Yeah.
I was wondering, because there are several times in which Prabhupada says that in Kali Yuga the Vedic system is not possible, and yet at the same time he felt it was 50% of his mission to establish the Varnashram system. That's a little bit, you know, confusing to try to reconcile with how on one hand it's not possible and yet on the other hand it's 50% of his mission. And so I was wondering, does that mean that as Krishna consciousness grows, the Varnashram system will be partially established, or it will be established but not exactly the way it did in Vedic times? What does all of that mean, really?
When Prabhupada was opening the Gurukula in Bombay, he was there, and they were just constructing it, and now it still exists. It's a really, if you go there, it's a really active school, like, you know, a lot of kids. But he then lectured on Canto 7 and the chapters that talk about Brahmacharya life, you know. And so it's very interesting because then Prabhupada makes commentaries on his own purports. And sometimes he says, this is not practical, you know, it's like right now, you know. And for example, instead of the children begging door to door, you know, going out begging door to door, he said, instead, as I remember, he said they should go in procession every morning to the beach, chanting, singing, and taking a bath in there and come back like that. So he's saying if they do things like this, they'll become famous all over India. And, you know, this Gurukula goes there and they sing and all the boys are so bright faced and happy, they take a nice bath, they play, and they come back, you know. So, we're not trying to establish Varnashram, we're trying to establish Bhagavad Dharma. And one of the results of Bhagavad Dharma is Daivi Varnashram. Then we can enter on the altar and worship the deity, we can perform fire sacrifices, and we can perform, what's the other one? Worship the Shalagram Shila. Yeah? So that's what, actually, to me, the resolution is that. It's just that. No, it's not possible to establish Varnashram And Prabhupada says that like this, but in the Krishna conscious fashion, you know, then yeah, we can take advantage of these things. And we expand them or we contract them depending upon how they serve the Bhagavad Dharma. Janivas in Mayapur says the Prabhupada said, if you follow the principles I'm giving you strictly, and your children follow them, then your grandchildren will be traveling on flying carpets. And I see, like, you know, the children of devotees were nice devotees. They go through different things. Every boy, when he reaches 18 years old, wants to experiment, travel, you know. Yeah. But it's natural. But in general, in many cases, very intense. You know, the second generation of our devotees, ISKCON devotees, who are following our principles, are quite extraordinary, you know. And so now we're heading into the third generation, like that. And so in that sense, okay, because we have the kind of people who can handle these things, then we're going to start applying the principles of Varnashram, you know, in a more, more detail, you know, but only because we've advanced in our Vaishnava culture, people have developed a certain kind of body, and then we can do it. And we can have people who can do, you know, all these brahmanical services with great potency and stuff like that. You know, they can adjust the weather. Drive away mosquitoes. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of, maybe we'll get just to the last 4 minutes here. Else have any comments or anything else?
Does anyone else have a comment or a question? I have one. Anybody?
Yeah, I Doug Madhavadas here. Maharaj, I really like your class. I think you have some good ideas. I think I like the retirement idea, less passionate, more in the mode of goodness. I like all that.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully it's not just my ideas. I mean, I talk to a lot of people traveling. That's one thing about sannyas. You can, Keshava Bharti is my next door neighbor now. When I came to the temple in San Francisco, he was the guy who kind of adopted me, gave me books, and preached to me when I visited. So it's like, and also Butsal's here. So it's kind of like reminiscing, seeing how the years have, you know, together. It's nice. But see, like the traveling in sannyasa ashram is nice. You can travel around and meet a lot of people. And, you know, and again, I have a tendency. And Hansa Duda told me in one of his fits of intense inspiration, Hanuman Swami, you're a man ahead of your time. So, and I can see myself as a fact. I have many times I have good ideas, but it's like, Baba, it's not time for it. It's like, you know, we're going to get to polygamy later. Now let's just not even talk about it now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So also to address something that was said before, that I'm a little shocked to hear that a lot of temples these days, and I was in one in South India even, where if it wasn't for me, there would be no Bhagavatam class. Daily Bhagavatam class. There's a lot of temples going on like that. And it seemed to me that Prabhupada put more emphasis on the ashrams than the varnas.
I agree. I mean, it's kind of like, again, Yare Deki Tari Kaha. It's just no Mangalarti, people not coming to Mangalarti. I'm sorry, not coming to Mangalarti. No Bhagavatam class, and no evening class, but yep, I agree. That's a big fight. You know, just by good example, you know, by preaching in a nice way that people can appreciate without becoming angry. Yeah, and that's right. The Brahminical culture. Yeah.
Exactly, and Prabhupada meant to train a class of Brahmin. One other point was that. And a Gaudiya Acharya pointed out that the practical history is that devotees are attracted to work with sannyasi to form preaching centers or preaching programs. That's just the history, if you look at it practically. And
yeah.
it's a natural thing. And that's why Prabhupada initiated sannyasis. He needed leaders.
Because, I mean, if the person is actually following his ashram, sannyas ashram, you know the person is not going to be concerned about, you know, taking money. He's not going to be concerned about, you know, collecting the opinion of women and even more gross like that. You know? Mm-hmm. So somebody actually, one idea was, okay, sannyasis have shown by their character that they're not influenced by the ladies so much, so therefore they should be put in charge of all the money also. Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, oh, help me. Yeah, I mean, it's universal. You know, Krishna says, no living entity, even Lord Brahma, is aloof from Maya in the form of a woman. Okay, you know, you can only maintain sannyasrama if you have an institution which allows for you to be not, you know, associating with the opposite sex. And if the ladies also want to have sannyasi, so they, you know, Prabhupada says, women as a source of inspiration are more powerful than men. And such powerful ladies have to learn how to control their influence by chastity and shyness. So it's every ashram, it's the culture in every ashram has to be there. The strength and purity of our sannyasa ashram can be directly connected with the strength and purity of our womanhood. That's it.
One other thing, Radhana Swami seems to have figured out how to develop a community. You've seen the Simple Temple video, yes?
Mm-hmm.
The people in front of the camera, they're not faking it. You can tell that these people are part of a family. You get that.
Yeah.
And it's some of the things that he's doing, like you were mentioning, Mangalarti. It's mandated. The temple president has to be there. All the leaders have to be there. The leaders are there for the japa every day. There's a rotating system of management. It's not you're bound to become a target or criticized at some point. But if it keeps changing.
Moving opportunity. But also, too, it's interesting, he made this point about that. He said, like, you can take advantage of the things we've done, you can think how to apply them in your own situation, but he said every center is different, you know. He said India is very different than California, for example, you know. And he said even in Bombay, you see, in the same city, there's the Chopati Temple, the Mira Road Temple, and his temple. And all three operate on a completely different, you know, paradigm, you know, of Krishna consciousness, even in the same city, like that. Yeah. But so his point too, actually, was Rick Warren too, is that in the end, you have to row your own boat. But yeah, you can take a lot of advantage from just seeing how other people are doing it, and you can take those ideas and use them. So any final questions, comments here? I guess maybe Ramananda, that I should get going.
If you don't mind, I can ask it quickly.
Uh-huh.
The other day, I had an interesting experience. The reason I'm asking is because you're very open, you know, about different challenges that we have in our society.
Okay. that sounds
which is nice. I like. It was interesting. I was sitting down the other day at a program, and one very senior devotee who fell away from the movement, this is the first time we really sat down and talked, and I just mentioned one other very senior devotee who had fallen away, and I said, I really liked him, you know. And he just went on for about an hour about how this devotee was this and that and how he ruined my life. And now, normally, if somebody starts going off like that, you know, then I would just have to politely excuse myself. But I just felt Krishna in the heart told me that, no, you should just let him speak. And after this encounter, he really appreciated that he could, reveal his heart, all of the things that he was mistreated with.
Uh-huh.
So in general, would it be better not to hear the blasphemy of devotees? As soon as you hear it, just, close your ears and leave. Or, sometimes devotees need to, say, this is what happened to me. I know that's kind of general. I don't want to give specifics, but, what's your take on that kind of thing?
So that's why, again, Pansadutta told us. my connection, my physical association with Prabhupada, my intimate Prabhupada is through Hansaduda, Jayananda, and Srupadamanamar for the most part. I don't have any like that, And so, different things. And also you got to judge people in terms of their position, what they say. Certainly Hansaduda said one time, it seems true, that Prabhupada said, every single psychological circumstance you can find, you'll encounter in Srimad Bhagavatam. And so that's probably why it's so big. In the pregnancy of Ditti in the evening, and then the Kardama and the Devahuti, it's just like Sukanya and Chaivanamuni, And so the story you're talking about sounds a little bit like Narada Muni and Maharaj Prachini Barisha. Narada Muni and Daksha, In Daksha. Because Narada Muni, he himself was the culprit causing these problems. And when Daksha saw him, Daksha just let it all off his chest and was chastising Narada. And on a high level, wasn't just a stupid level. He was giving reasons why Narada was bogus sannyasi and doing all this wrong stuff, And Prabhupada says that Narada Muni shouldn't have tolerated this because Daksha was committing offenses to a pure devotee. But he knew that Daksha was really, deep down, a really pious guy and really sincere guy, And so therefore he knew, after he let him get it off his chest, that Daksha would feel really bad about acting like a real ass in front of Narada Muni. And he would really feel bad and apologize for acting like that. And then become more like, can't you see what I'm saying? And then Narada Muni then could talk to him. And then Daksha would understand, which he did. That actually, no, I really awakened their sense of, of higher realization, So, that's the whole thing, the super soul. I agree, I had the same experience with my mother when I became a devotee. I wanted to preach like a fanatic. She wanted to talk about who was having hernia operations. And so then the super soul was telling me, just shut up and listen, I listened to her for about 20 minutes, and she talked all about the family. It was kind of interesting, And then finally, at the end of the 20 minutes, she said, so what is this Krishna consciousness? And then I tried to explain it. And she got a little bit, and I could see that, and I could really see that she was less sincere than I was, but it's just that was just her level of development, And so sometimes, we should let people express themselves and get it out, And other times we should avoid them, and other times we should argue with them, and the only thing is that this yare daki tari kaha, we have to become more advanced, as Prabhu was saying, by hearing and chanting Shrimpatam Swakata Krishnam, going through the Bhagavatam, taking all these stories to heart. Then we can know when to deal with it and not when to deal with it. So it sounds like what you're saying is you did the right thing, and the person was able to maybe get it all out and think about it and then have a little bit of calm discussion of what happened. So that's what seems to me, but it seems like it's not a general thing.
No, that's good. Thank you, Maharaj.
I have a comment. This is Rai Ram.
Rai.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. The earlier comment that Narahari made about that we shouldn't maybe emphasize Van Ashram and just try to become pure devotees. Krishna created the Van Ashram system to help us escape the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada wanted to the ashram system. So it's a process. If we want to become pure devotees, we have to follow the process. And the Vana ashram system, which was created by Krishna, is a very important part of that process of becoming a pure devotee.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. In the introduction to Upadeshamrita, I have right here, Prabhupada says, to achieve the highest success in life by becoming a Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord, one should follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita. So I think again it's the same thing, it's just they're really parallel, especially in the Kali Yuga. They're parallel, yeah. I have to go now, it's 12:40, and I actually have to go to start working for my next class on Friday and Saturday. I have 4 classes every day. It's really, it's nectarian, you know, but it's also, you know, got to be careful. Okay, we'll do that. The servant of the black moon. Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody, so much. These classes for us are so nice.
Thank you, Mark.